Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Tom Chase, CEO of Insurers Financial Corporation and past chair of Waco's Public Improvement District No. 1. Hosting the conversation is Jim Haller, Executive Vice President for Marketing for First National Bank of Central Texas. This program was recorded July 31, 2014 at the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Tom Chase, CEO of Insurers Financial Corporation and past chair of Waco's Public Improvement District No. 1. Well, Tom, it's a delight to have you here today, and I know you are a civic leader, business leader, pub owner, farmer pecan rancher, a great-grandfather, a world-renowned traveler. We're going to cover all these topics with you today, but let's start out with your family business and tell us a little bit of how Insurers of Texas or however, how's that started and how did you get involved?
Well, thanks, Jim. Glad to be here. That's a little large description of me, larger than life, I guess is correct. The insurer's business started in 1900 with a man named E.W. Marshall, who was a large, big Waco civic leader through the 10, 20s, and 30s. My grandfather came in and joined him in the 20s. And then my uncle took over in the 50s, I took over in the 70s, and my son took over the agency part in the 2010s. So we've got a long family history. It consists of both a retail insurance operation and then the part that I now operate exclusively is the underwriting. And we have about 300 agents in Texas and New Mexico and Oklahoma.
Now, did you go straight into the business after graduating from Vanderbilt University, or how did you evolve into your role?
I went to the University of Texas Law School and then practiced law with Naaman Howell for 3.5 years and then went in the insurance business.
See, I didn't say renowned attorney either, so that's another feather in your cap. But, well, that's interesting, and I know so many people in town have depended on your company for their insurance for years, and I didn't even know how it evolved from the past. I know that you're proud of your family. You mentioned that George is now a significant part of your company. Tell us a little bit about your immediate family and your role as a grandfather.
I am married to Penny and have been since 1966. We have two children, Felicia Goodman, who is the executive director of the Cooper Foundation, and then George, who you mentioned, who is the president of Insurers of Texas General Agency. And then they each have two girls, they are a big part of my life. I enjoy them very much.
Well, as we were chatting a while ago, you talked about, I asked you if you had a busy weekend coming up, and you said, yeah, this is Camp Gramps weekend. So I thought that was great. Tell our listeners about that deal. That sounds pretty cool.
Well, my grandfather name is Gramps, which was also the grandfather name of my grandfather. And each year in the summer, we take a day and take a trip, just the four girls and me. And this year we're going to the Safari Park at Glen Rose and have barbecue at some barbecue restaurant we've been to before that they love in Glen Rose.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Wish I could join you, but you'll have your hands full. I want to talk extensively today about all your activities, but something I think most people in our community realize is you've been a big part of the revitalization of downtown Waco. Your company for years, as far as I remember, was back at about 37th and Waco Drive. And then all of a sudden, I hear the big announcement, you're moving downtown. Tell us about the historic building you moved into and how did that evolve?
Well, you mentioned Penny and I like to travel, and we've spent a good deal of time in Chicago and New York and London. And those larger cities have had a great renaissance in their old buildings being converted into new uses. And I'd watched the Southwestern Drug Building for a long time in downtown Waco, but it was just too bad an area. As Sam Jack McGlasson said, it was a brain-dead area. And we watched the Dr. Pepper Museum grow, and at one point it purchased and then tore down and landscaped the lot across from the Dr. Pepper Museum. At that point, I was finally able to see that downtown Waco could come back too. It just took cleaning up what was bad so that people could be comfortable in investing in the downtown area. And so we purchased the old Southwestern Drug Building, which had been, that was in 2003, and it had been vacant since 1989. And the pigeon, it was mostly occupied, I shouldn't say it was vacant, it was occupied by pigeons. And that was quite a cleanup. We bought that building and redid it, and at that point I've got interested in what the city could do, and kind of lobbied to get on the Public Improvement District board, and it kind of went from there.
And you've been in the building now for 10 years?
It'll be 10 years next fall.
And obviously you've been pleased, and it's become quite an attraction to everybody driving down Fifth Street. I know that.
Well, thanks. It's been great. People ask, what's so great about moving downtown? And really, it's the walkability. If you say what makes a downtown, it's the ability to walk around easily and go to shops, go to restaurants, go to pubs, and go down to the river and walk at lunch. It's just a great feeling of not having to drive to lunch, for example. And that may seem like a little thing, but it's just a wonderful feeling to be in a business that's downtown.
Well, you mentioned the word close to pubs. I know you have opened Barnett's Pub down very close to your office. How did you get the idea to do that, and what were the reasons behind that?
As a part of the purchase of the Southwestern Drug Building, we had to buy the lot across the street from us that actually my brother Jim owned. And he put the britches on me and made me buy the buildings in order to get the parking lot, because it at that point would have been by far the most valuable part of it. So we had these two buildings, and couldn't figure out anything to do with them. And at some point, the need for a place for business people to come together after work, for students, business people, older people in the community to mingle, seemed an important thing. And so we've had a very strict policy. We've had no trouble. I better knock on on wood here. We've had no trouble. We've had no demerits in our health inspections, and it's just really a first-class establishment for people to come to.
Well, as a sometime patron, I'm happy to say that it is quite a great addition to downtown. It's an English pub.
Well, it's an Irish pub.
An Irish pub. But how did you decide that was going to be your theme?
I've always enjoyed English pubs and Irish pubs when we travel. But I did some investing in England in the 80s that turned out very poorly. And so I decided that I might as well be antagonistic to the English and have an Irish pub.
Well, so carry on.
So we had an Irish pub. It's very English looking. Of course, England and Ireland were close for a long time. But that's just kind of the joke that I lost money in England, so I'm having an Irish pub.
Well, it's been great. For those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Tom Chase, CEO of Inshore's Financial Corporation and past chair of Waco's Public Improvement District. Tom, we've mentioned your company moved downtown. You've opened Barnett's Pub. You became chair of the Public Improvement District. Tell us what PID does exactly so all our listeners can understand that role.
The Public Improvement District is a board of the city of Waco, and it is created by the vote of the property owners that are within the district. And the district was authorized by the property owners, and a board was appointed by the city council. And it doesn't actually have any power. Everything goes through the city council, but it has a nice budget, not as great as the tax increment financing district. We always laughed. That was the rich cousin of the public improvement district. But the public improvement district can influence the city council and bring forth the opinions and the consensus of the property owners as best it can, of course. And that's what we use to entice the city council to do what I think was the most important part of the original revitalization of downtown Waco, which was an ordinance requiring all the boarded windows to be unboarded and barbed wire that was around some of the parking lots to be taken down. And as I said earlier, to me it's that nobody wants to invest in an area that's deteriorating, but a lot of people want to invest in an area that's improving. So once those boards came down, the barbed wire came down, it started. And Upper Austin, well, Middle Austin, we called it, which is the 7th Street, 8th Street, 6th Street, began a great revitalization. And I think now there's only, I'm not sure of this, but there's only one truly vacant, rundown, non-usable building on Austin Avenue up through about 9th Street. Hmm. And Bill Falco was the planning director at that time and worked that through. It's done wonders for the city.
Well, your years as chairman of that public improvement district, what do you personally take the most pride in that came about during your tenure and with your committee?
I think that ordinance is what I think is the most important thing we did during those years. We also, I take great pride in the designation of the downtown area as a National Historic District. That frees up developers to apply for federal tax credits, even if their building is not eligible for listing on the National Register. Because it's in a historic district, it's entitled to the reconstruction cost is entitled to a tax deduction. And that hadn't been used a whole lot, but it needs to be used more.
How does the PID, or Public Improvement District, how do you co-work or how do you share responsibilities with, say, the Waco Downtown Development Corporation? Distinguish between the two and how you might work together.
The Downtown Development Corporation, I was on the initial board of that, and Megan Henderson told me, in fact, last night that the Downtown Development Corporation was taking over management of the Public Improvement District, which is something that had been talked about in the past but that I didn't know was happening. So they're hand in glove. They work together, and now it'll be essentially one, well, it'll be two organizations, but essentially one management.
What, I'm sure it excites you, but we've seen the improvement from 9th Street back with the possibilities of Rick Sheldon and Joe Beard and that group's efforts on the river, what do you see is really happening now and how this explosion could help so much the continued revitalization of the downtown area?
The new construction will add a lot of tax values, which should, if it's not all given away to those developers, will be available for future development. And that's something I'm just not up on. I consider it somewhat of a risk that it takes so much money to get theirs going that it doesn't allow the city to spend money in the future on smaller projects. And I think that when, as I went off the Public Improvement District Board, that was a discussion back and forth with the TIF board. But overall, any kind of redevelopment is wonderful. And it should also help across the river because, again, on the east side of the river has not, except with a few exceptions, had the comeback that the west side of the river has had. And it needs it. It needs it. It needs a developer or group of developers who can do some things.
I wanted to get your opinion since you're a lifelong Waco resident. I hear so many people talking now about the apparent cooperation and spirit of improvement for our city with the great work that's being combined with Baylor and the city of Waco. I know our city council appropriated $35 million to go toward the new McLean Stadium. How do you see that impacting the city for the betterment of us all in the future?
Well, this gets, I guess, a little bit into a personal opinion, but Baylor has stepped up to the plate for the last 5 or 6 years to help downtown Waco. And what I heard, I can't say it as gospel, is that they did a survey of applicants for admission who did not come, and they got a large percentage of them who said they didn't want to live in a dangerous area. They didn't want to come to school in a dangerous area. And Baylor, with Reagan Ramsauer, all of a sudden, I call it all of a sudden, became extremely interested in the revitalization of downtown. And Reagan personally has been just a great help. He served on the Public Improvement District, and Baylor has stepped up, and I think it's worked both ways with the contribution of the city to the stadium that was very helpful to Baylor. Baylor's help has been great in helping revitalize downtown. And the bus service that runs out to Baylor, they've mostly taken over. At least that was the way it used to be. They've done a great job. And I'm a Vanderbilt University of Texas guy who doesn't have any real connection with Baylor, but I admire what they have recently done to help downtown.
Let's expand our discussion here to the overall picture of our city. What is your biggest concern now, or what would you like to see as maybe a change of philosophy to even make our city better and continue the vibrancy of downtown?
We continue to spend money, not just in Waco, but all over Texas and in lots of areas across the country, in what I call, everybody calls urban sprawl. We build new roads. We build subdivisions out in the country that take farmland and prairie land. That's another thing. I'm a big advocate of restoration of the prairies that I'll tell you about if you're interested. And while we have all the infrastructure in place in the older sections of Waco, and to me it makes no sense to continue to build roads out into the country, which encourage more people to move out when we have, at great expense, in both new roads and sewers and water and fire protection, and when we already have that covered in our existing areas. And I would like to see a real effort put on revitalization of more areas. There's certainly effort going on. I don't mean to in any way downplay that people are doing, the city and the county are doing things, but there's just so much more that could be done, and encouragement for people to redevelop areas. They're doing it, but we need a lot more.
Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit, Tom. We've talked about business. We've talked about the civic leadership. We've talked about your involvement in downtown. What do you like to do when you have a free weekend, free afternoon? I know I see you riding your bicycle to work, which I've always admired, but what do you do as stress relief? What do you like to do?
Well, that's where my prairie restoration comes in. We have a tract of land in Bosque County, and I have gotten become very interested in restoring a tract of land to the way it was before the Indians were run off and the white settlers came in and fenced and farmed. To me, the whole ecology, environment, part of the reason I'm not big on urban sprawl, we need to leave a remnants as best we can of prairies and forest and those type things for future generations. And my little part is to restore a tract of land with the native grasses and forbs and wildflowers, and it's just a lot of fun. Killing cactus and cutting down junipers.
I want to ride out there and see that sometime. That sounds cool. It sounds like hard work, too.
Good deal of work.
I mentioned you used to be a pecan farmer. Tell us a little bit about that experience. You still have that?
I still have that, but I was going to become a farmer once, and very fortunately I didn't. I have tremendous respect for all farmers in this kind of economy that favors the urban. But we just had some pecan trees on a track, and I bought all the equipment, and fortunately I found someone who wanted it more than I did, and after 1 year of it, I sold it to him.
Well, you still got that smile on your face. Sounds like a happy day. Well, I know you and Penny like to travel a lot, and I've always enjoyed visiting with you about your many travels. Where are your favorite places that you have been around the world?
How we started, I got to tell you that. A big deal was to go skiing at spring break when our children were young. And the first time we did that, our son had a compound fracture of his leg. So not only did we miss all the skiing, we spent most of it in the hospital. And I thought, what a very expensive way to spend a week. Mm-hmm. So in those days, you could go to London on American Airlines, and they would have the hotel and the airfare all for $300 or $400 or $500, depending on the year. So we started going to Europe, then and enjoyed that greatly for a number of years. I have no favorite place. It's just getting exposure to the rest of the world is just so valuable, and we took the children on those, and I think they're much better for having seen the world early.
Well, I know you have told me about trips where you would go like in a riverboat and then walk so many miles and get on the boat again. Tell our listeners about that experience.
That was a very good one. In England, we rented a canal boat, which was 6 feet wide and 50 feet long, and went up and down the canals. And we would get out and walk for a day or half day, and then get back on the boat and stop at pubs and restaurants for dinner. And a great way to see the countryside and talk to locals instead of just kind of being in a hotel somewhere. And it's the talking to the locals and learning about their culture that we've always considered so important in travel.
Well, I know you told me just last week you and Penny were up in Idaho at a conference. Tell us, it sounded interesting to me. Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
We have a friend in California who just happened to be in Sun Valley, Idaho 1 year and went to this writers' conference, the Sun Valley Writers' Conference. And the next year she got some the Allisons, friends of ours in Waco, to come. And then the next year after that, they got us. And we've been going now for 8 or 9 or 10 years. I can't remember. Just come back, as you say, an absolutely wonderful conference where we're not writers, we're readers. And so the ability, the writers who were there range from Stephen Breyer of the Supreme Court, Dave Barry, the humorist of the Miami Herald, Scott Turow, the lawyer who writes all the books, Abraham Verghese, who's a wonderful doctor from Stanford who writes on medical ethics, just lots of excellent writers that you can stand around and talk to, and it's just a wonderful experience, again, to learn what the rest of the world thinks.
So do they actually do book reviews, or are they more in a lecture style and you respond?
You don't really respond. It's more in a lecture style. They have breakout sessions where you're in a group of probably 30 people to 50 with the speaker. For example, I walked from one venue to the other with Justice Breyer, had a very nice conversation, and it just it's really a thrilling experience to talk one-on-one with a Supreme Court justice.
I can imagine. Well, knowing you, you always have a challenge on your mind or a project on your mind. You've surprised me with your prairie restoration today. What's the next big thing that Tom Chase wants to do?
We want to expand our insurance company to be a much larger organization. And we have a new president who came in July the 1st. And our plan is to build that business into a lot more states, and that's kind of what I'm devoting my time to now.
Well, sounds like a big time challenge. So
it's a big time challenge.
What about civically? Anything that you have on your plate that you want to get accomplished besides just your business endeavor?
The prairie is what I'm working on outside of the business now. I'm one of those people who gets all wrapped up in something and then I kind of quit and go on to something else. And now it's the business and the prairie. That way I can focus on just a few things.
Give us a typical day when you go to the prairie to do your work. You stay out there all day. What do you do? Do you have helpers? What's the action?
There are two main things that have to be done to restore a prairie before you can even start getting the grasses to grow, and that's to get rid of the juniper, or what we call cedar trees. The infestation of those through overgrazing and, mostly overgrazing over the years has just made much land into cedar forest. And then the cactus. The prickly pear cactus, which our place is in some areas covered with. So I have a machine that works on both of those, two different machines that work on both of those. And so I spend a lot of time till I wear out doing that.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for giving us all a chance to know more about the life and times of Tom Chase and for sharing your stories. And thank you so much for joining us here today. And best wishes to you.
Thank you for having me.
This program was recorded July 31st, 2014 at the KWBU studio.